Support for the Closing Market Report podcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of June, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Bakes. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll hear about the cash grain market with the folks from the Andersons facility in Logansport, Indiana, and look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. This morning, the United States Department of Agriculture released the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. We'll go through those numbers. Suffice it to say that USDA has lowered the total projected production of corn across the United States, down 135 million bushels. But no worries, still a binbuster crop on tap at 14 billion bushels total. We'll find out what that means as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
In Chicago on a Wednesday afternoon, futures finished with the nearby July wheat down 13 and three quarters at $6.83. September there at $6.91, down 14. The hard red finished the July harvest month at $7.16.5, down 13.5. The corn pit in Chicago shows red as well, down 8 3/4 in the lead option July at $6.50 3/4 a bushel. September at $5.75, 8.5 lower. And December, the new crop harvest month for corn at $5.37.5, down 13 1/4. March contract finished 5.48 1/4, down 13 1/4 as well, and the May contract 13.5 cents for next year, down at 5.55 1/4 on the settlement price. July futures for the soybeans up 0.25 cents. It was the only gainer that we really see for the day. $15.40 3/4 settlement price. August at $14.45 1/4, down 5.5 cents. September beans down 7 at $13.58 3/4. In November, the harvest month at $13.14 1/4 in the bean pit, down 12 3/4. January futures $13.20 1/2 cents, down 13.5. Bean meal futures finished at $4.61.40. down $2. Bean oil was up 7 cents at $48.11. Live cattle finished the August contract at $119.52.5, down 17.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Feeder cattle in Chicago finished the September at $147.92.5. That was $1.12.5 higher for the afternoon. And July lean hogs at $99.17.5 finished 2.5 cents higher. The outside market show crude oil for the day at $95.86 a barrel, up 48 cents. And the RBOB gasoline at $2.80 9/10 a penny and 3/10 lower. Ethanol trading $2.43 4/10. That's down 0.5 cents. And the RBOB gasoline at to ethanol spread at 37.5 cents now, just about 0.8 cents narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at 377.5, up 5 1/10 cents, and diesel fuel or heating oil at New York, $2.89 1/10. That's 3 4/10 cents higher. Gold futures finished at $1,392.10 an ounce, up $15, and the U.S. dollar at 80.94 is down 0.16 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. A 40% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms. Those come after 4. Some of the storms could be severe. Partly sunny with a high of 94 for the most part, however. Heat index values today as high as 102 with a west-southwest wind at 15 to 17. Those winds will turn eventually. Showers and thunderstorms will continue through the evening from 7 to 1 a.m. Some of the storms could be severe. Low of 64 for the tomorrow. Or tonight, and then tomorrow, not nearly as warm, but still nice. A high of 79 degrees and mostly sunny skies. The wind will be out of the north by then at 14 to 17 miles an hour, and mostly clear on Thursday night with a low of 55. A northeast wind at 8 to 10 miles an hour. That a gust all the way to 15 miles an hour. Sunny skies on Friday and 79 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of June. World agricultural supply and demand estimates were released this morning. Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County is on the phone line to talk about those numbers. Thanks for taking the time with us, Jackie. How did the market react to the 11 o'clock report today?
Well, the initial reaction was pretty violently down, let's just put it that way, at the beginning. And yet, you know, that came, I believe, Todd, because when you looked at the average guesses for the United States, basically the guesses were all too low for the numbers that the USDA came in with, primarily because they raised old crop corn carry-in by 10 million bushels, pushed us up rather than staying the same on the carry-out for nearby corn. And same thing with wheat. Then you looked at the 13-14 numbers, and you know the average guess was right around at 1.8. billion, and we came in at 1.949. So initially they looked at it and went, oh my gosh, this is horrible, and it just started to drop. Then I think they took a deep breath and looked at the world numbers, and basically at the world level, all the guesses were too high, totally the opposite. And this is the first time in all the time that I've been doing this and tracking what goes on in these reports that I've actually seen the USDA make as many carry-in adjustments as they did. Like I said, they raised the bean carry or they raised the wheat carry-in and the corn carry-in on the U.S. numbers, and on the world numbers, they actually lowered the corn carry-in, the bean carry-in, and the wheat carry-in. And so, you know, those are all the kinds of things you can't outguess when this is going on. And so ultimately, we were down, you know, 8¾ cents on July corn. Beef did function well. It went down and actually filled the gap that we had left back on the 24th of May. That was a good thing. We were looking for that to happen. Closed down 13 cents. The old crop beans, where they really didn't make any adjustments at all, Todd, traded higher most of the day and then just ended up a quarter cent higher. New crop beans stayed right in that 13-15 area, down about 12 cents. And wheat was down both in Chicago and in KC, and primarily because when you looked at the wheat numbers there, too, the guesses were too low. We actually saw a higher all-winter wheat number. The hard red wheat number was higher, and therefore that made the all-wheat number higher. So I think that we pretty much got what we deserved in some respects because of what our guesses were. But all in all, I would say I think the market actually responded marvelously.
Let's take a closer look at some of the numbers. So acreage, USDA uses, of course, the planting intentions number, and they're still at 97.3 for corn. Harvested acres at 89.5, that's what they've been at. And then for actual yield, they did drop the actual yield from 158 to 156.5 for corn nationwide. That still gives us a 14 billion bushel corn crop, but if you really start to do some of the numbers, you can scale that back pretty quickly on the idea that there might be 4 million bushels that don't get planted this year, or corn acres that don't get planted this year. Is that right?
Well, that's right. And, you know, that 156.5 is right in what a person might expect, you know, at this point in time. The late planting, there's just no question in my mind that we have a lot of people who are looking at this and saying we're probably going to take a 10% yield drop, even if we don't lose a lot of acres. And so for them, they're never going to change acres on the June report, and not with the June 30th acreage report coming right at the end of the month. And so a drop in yield is always an indication to me that they're implying that we are going to drop in acres. The part that's always a little nerve-wracking when we get into the next report in July will they adjust that acreage or adjust the yield back up higher even though we drop acres, because we now are considering that we're dropping out the worst acres that come along. And you know, when you look at the overall picture, is this acreage report going to be, I think you mentioned it when you and I talked earlier, is it just an advanced intentions report because we're still not done planting and they're taking the all of the information right now in these first 2 weeks of June. So I think the trade is going to treat it just that way. They're going to say, okay, this is a guideline, and that's all it is for this year just because of the weather conditions that we've had.
Can we move on into the consumption side or demand side of the corn numbers? Start with the feed and residual figures and then kind of work your way down for me.
Okay. Well, you know, when you look at the U.S. and you look at the feed, it's interesting. Last month they dropped us they increased feed usage by 925 million and held the 2 billion bushel carryout. Now this month they dropped feed usage by 125 million. Crush went up by 5 and ethanol went up by 50. I was a little surprised at the ethanol number, to be absolutely honest with you, but I think that, you know, they're looking at it and they're still saying that corn is going to be 480 a bushel. That's going to be profitable, and therefore we may see more of that. I think that that's where some of the justification and feed usage comes from, is that it's going to be less expensive. And we know that corn is less expensive than wheat right now. So I think that their assumption is on anything that's going to happen here, we're going to see a new crop, basically more corn fed again than what we had been feeding. But out of the corn side of it, ethanol was probably the biggest surprise to me.
And then talk a little bit about their average cash price, because they did raise that. It went from 430 to 510 on the range to 440 to 520. And maybe what your thought process would be for producers and anything, if there's anything at all new that they might want to do with pricing new crop corn.
Well, I think one of the things that we have to be very careful of is, and this seems to be rampant at this point in time. We have a lot of apathy. We have a lot of people who said, you know, we've got weather problems, and basically, you know, this just means that corn price is going to go higher. And then we also have what I would call equity. You know, equity is where we've had a number of good years, we feel pretty comfortable, and therefore we're not sure we really want to do anything either. And I think a person I believe a person must be active in risk management. You don't stop managing your risk just because you feel more comfortable or because things have worked in the past. When you look at the fact that the USDA on the corn side of things, to hold us at a 2 billion bushel carryout, raised usage by 1.725 billion. And now today they took away 125 million of that. But at the very same time, that tells me that even if we have crop problems, we are still very sensitive to what price is going to be. And it's very easy for them, just like we saw today, and lop off 125 million in feed usage. You know, and the price goes higher, lop off another 250 million in feed usage, and you can find yourself in a place you never expected to be. So I think that you must be keeping up at all times on what your basis is doing. You either do something in cash on the up times that we've had. I mean, we were up at 550 this morning again. And if you don't want to do that, do either a futures or get in here and do some options, because I just don't believe that you can bet your operation, especially when you look at what input costs are, on the idea that we are going to go back higher. And if you do feel that way, then make a cash sale and use a call to have some re-ownership and then take a lot of your risk off the table.
When you look at the soybean numbers that USDA released this morning in the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, they didn't change anything with the exception of the average farm price. So we still have a 265 ending stock number for the 2013-14 marketing year. But they raised the ending, the average season's price by 25 cents on both ends to $9.75 to $11.75.
I know. I look at that, and you wonder how you can justify that, other than to say that since last month's report came out, we have seen the bean, you know, the old crop bean crop come forward on price, and therefore it's pulling new crop up. And I guess it's an implied statement, Todd, as far as I'm concerned, that, you know, we are still continuing to be very short on old crop beans, and the question is, you know, one side says we're going to lose 700, we're going to gain 700,000 acres of beans because we're not planting any corn, and the other side says we're going to lose 1 million acres of beans. And so I think that this is a reflection at the WASDE level of saying they're very uncertain, and therefore you know, to be able to add 25 cents to the average bushel by not making the change probably just comes because there was no reason to make a change.
Turn your attention to some of the outside things that have been influencing the marketplace. Usually about this time of the month, the Goldman roll happens. How's that going?
Well, this was the fourth day. Tomorrow is the final day. And that was probably that was one of my big concerns. Sure, we've got Goldman roll going on top of this. And if this is negative old crop, it could really be serious. And I think the market just said to us, hey, we're not as concerned as what this might imply. And so we're always happy to see that end every month. You know, and I had a question, to be honest with you, Todd, as to whether it was going to be the same as it is other years, because the danger of being delivered on in July is very, very low, and we actually don't get the first notice day until we get to the end of the month. And so they may hang in there a little longer, or they may exit and go back in. Nobody really knows. But normally they would roll from the July either into the September and December. And you just didn't really see that. It didn't appear that action was there. Let's put it that way.
And finally, one other item, and I will defer to you to simply comment on this because of your Wisconsin and dairy roots. The U.S. Senate passed a farm bill, and it'll have an impact on dairymen.
It certainly will, and I think it's an impact that a lot of dairymen didn't even think could happen. The Senate bill includes a supply management program for milk. In other words, what it does is it gives the government the ability to be able to control how much milk is actually produced in the U.S. And the big thing that's been being pushed at this point in time is what they call an LGM dairy insurance program. And that insurance program says we'll guarantee a certain margin. If it falls below this, you know, you'll get a payment. One of the things in the Senate bill says if you sign up for LGM, you now have to sign. You have to be a part of the supply management, and therefore, if they deem that we have oversupply, they can actually shave money off from the farmers who take part in the LGM program. And so, there's always a catch, you know, no matter how you look at it. So it's going to hit to the House. From what I understand, the House has a similar program in it. So the dairy farmers, when you're really looking at perhaps signing up for LGM and thinking that that's going to be your risk management, you might want to take a step back and say, I really don't know if I want to do this yet until I have all the details and until this farm bill's actually passed.
Jackie, thank you so much, and look forward to having you on Commodity Week this week.
You betcha. Thanks, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. She is in Champaign County, and we talked to her on Wednesday afternoons.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Up next here on the Closing Market Report, you know the federal inheritance tax laws changed earlier in the year, and as you'll hear, it may mean many estate trusts are now out of date. Many small business owners set up AB or marital trust in their estate plans. Essentially, these work to keep a portion of the estate in a tax-free trust, that's A, and then move the remaining estate into a taxable trust, B, for the surviving spouse. The change in the federal tax law, says University of Illinois tax specialist Gary Hoff, may have altered the intent of these estate plans.
For example, that typical trust said that all of the assets in value up to the marital deduction amount or the federal exemption amount would go into one trust. The second trust then would be the remainder of the assets. So what went into that first trust was all federal tax free. What went into the second trust, all those assets are available for the survivor and is taxed in the survivor's estate. Well, when we had $1 million exemption amount or less, that worked very well. But now that we're setting today with a $5.25 million exemption, there may be nothing left to go into this other trust. Consequently, not leaving that surviving spouse anything to live on.
It's all a matter of language. The existing plan, says Hoff, may very well have worked with the tax laws at the time of drafting, but may now be out of date.
My suggestion for everyone, as rapidly as we get changes in the tax law, is that every 2 years at the minimum, they have their plan reviewed.
Those wanting simply to know more about estate tax planning from a layman's point might also consider attending the Illinois Tax School's Estate and Succession Planning event. That's scheduled for the 24th day of June at the Marriott Hotel in Normal, Illinois. It's targeted to farmers and landowners, but good for all those who make estate planning decisions. The cost is just $40 for the day-long event, including the meal. It is sponsored by Farm Credit. You may register online at taxschool.illinois.edu/legacy. Again, that's taxschool.illinois.edu/legacy. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Let's check the cash grain market. Stephen Linneber is with us from the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. Tell me about reaction by the buyers and, of course, by the farmers to USDA's WASDE numbers this morning, Stephen.
Really, from a standpoint of comparing figures to the May report, we see it as really unchanged. Small numbers here and there, but when you look at the ending stocks, I think the market reads into it as from a bean side, the 125 ending stocks was probably the most talked about number today. Just from seeing that as a delay in harvest, got to survive a little longer on ending crop stocks, and definitely had a little bit of push in July beans today with the report.
So were you expecting that number to be bigger than it was, an increase in some form for the crop? That would surprise me.
Not so much that, but at the same time, I mean, they didn't expect the response in the market to that minimum number either.
Right.
I think that was a number that we've expected here through the May, and when we look at it now, had that short-term rally there. Definitely had us a little curious as to why that number was kind of had the panic button hit to trade into that 550, 1555 and better levels this afternoon.
Yeah, so when you look at the numbers, you suspect that we still need to hunt down more beans, or we're going to use more of them at least.
Definitely, and I think, also we see a little bit of shift in imports to exports. I mean, the import number, came in a little more increased, and we dropped down the export number, which essentially that cancels it out. Cancels those numbers out, but when you look at it from a supply and demand standpoint, certainly see the imports becoming more important as we approach the end of the crop year.
Everybody in your area got most all things in?
Very much so. Call it 100% around the Logansport area for sure.
Man, what do you think your availability of corn to run the ethanol plant through July and August will be?
July very good. August now is where we've more so turned our focus on the bid versus the September in relation to the July, looking into the more deferred months to get corn bought for the month of August. July very much better than expected.
And your bids for the day?
$1.30 over the September, which would be $7.05 cash.
All right, thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
That's Stephen Linneber. He's with the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. Back in 2 minutes with the Ag Weather Forecast.
It's National Peanut Butter Cookie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1897, Carl Elsner patented the Swiss Army knife. The original was called a soldier's knife. It had a wooden handle and featured a cutting blade, a screwdriver, a can opener, and a punch. Elsner was not happy with his original design, and after 5 years of experimentation, he managed to put blades on both sides of the handle using a special spring mechanism. He added a second cutting blade and a corkscrew. Today, you can get the Swiss Army knife with a laser pointer and a detachable USB flash drive. In 2004, a federal judge upheld a rule issued by USDA, which declared that frozen batter-coated French fries are fresh vegetables. The judge stated that the term fresh vegetables was ambiguous. By the way, in 1981, USDA tried to classify ketchup and pickle relish as vegetables so that schools could cut out a serving of cooked or fresh vegetables from hot lunch program child nutrition requirements. The idea was met with public outrage, and USDA ended up with ketchup on its face. The plan was never implemented. And in 2007, a number of international organizations joined in Rome to sign a document pledging to work against child labor in agriculture. Worldwide, agriculture is the sector where the largest share of working children is found. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City is here. Drew, thanks for being with us. Tell me about the weather forecast. It's been really warm, but I think we're going to have a cool down.
Well, it's that time of the year when we're doing a lot of fighting with these air masses, and indeed we do have quite a bit of warmth around at the moment, but there is a cool front that will be working its way from south to north across the Midwest as we go through the night tonight and into the day tomorrow. It will bring a refreshing amount of cooler and somewhat drier air back across the region after a line of thunderstorms impacts a fairly large part of the Midwest. We're coming out of parts of Minnesota and Iowa, running east and southeastward into Ohio and reaching down to parts of the Ohio River. Now, central Illinois probably will only see a small portion of the stronger storms that will occur to the north. We'll probably see rain totals in the central parts of the state running upwards to maybe a half inch, a local three-quarter inch amount, whereas some of the areas in the northern areas, including the Chicago region on the eastward across the Michigan-Indiana border, will run from 1 to 2 inches, maybe some local 2 to 3 inch amounts in a few counties. So some aggressive storms, maybe even some severe weather up there across some of that area as well. And the further south you go, close to the Ohio River, the lighter the rains will be. Probably some areas will be either totally missed or get a quarter of an inch or so.
When you look across the growing regions in the United States from west to east, are there still concerns, whether that be for the corn, the soybean, or the wheat crop?
Well, I think there are some concerns, but to a large degree, they are either occurring rather late in the growing season, in the case of the winter wheat crop, or it is too far south to have a big impact on the heart of the corn and soybean belt. And what I'm talking about in particular is as we move forward through the next few weeks, we'll see a dry and warm bias in the southern half of the U.S. plains, and that'll be good for the wheat harvest. Not so good for any of the summer crops that are produced in Kansas, Missouri, portions of the Delta, and down into the southern plains. Those areas will probably take it on the chin, my guess is. The rest of the Midwest, though, looks like they'll have some very well-balanced rain and thunderstorm activity with sunshine and dry conditions, and we will see aggressive crop development take place across the Midwest, with temperatures probably averaging near to above average in the southwestern part of the Corn Belt and maybe a little bit cooler biased in the north and northeastern parts of the region.
I know you've been watching weather across the planet, growing regions in the northern hemisphere. Anything of major concern in that area?
There are only a few areas of issue at the moment. One has been in central parts of Europe where it's been unusually cool, actually central and western parts of the continent, a very cool spring. And it's only been recently where temperatures actually started to get closer to normal. And of course, they had all the severe flooding that occurred about a week to 10 days ago, and they're still cleaning up from that. That's an issue over there with some loss in production potential expected because of all this adversity. Also in Russia, in their lower Volga River basin, they've been in a drought for 2 or 3 years, and it looks like they are not getting out of that. So there's going to be an area that's relatively small in size, but it's still very potent and a very important spring wheat and sunseed producing area, which will not be doing very well this year. And lastly, it looks like both India and China are doing very well with their rainy season. season's underway. The only other place I can think of that's got a problem right now is maybe a small part of Western Australia where there is a need for greater amounts of rainfall for wheat, barley, and canola.
Drew, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Hey, you too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.